The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio.
Coming up on the program today, we're going to discuss about backyards being bad for the environment, as well as the new USDA hardiness zones. And our guest is garden mythbuster Robert Pulvilus, and we'll answer your garden questions. Season 8 is kicking off. Join us. Let's start right now.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
And welcome to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy to have you along for the beginning of season 8. We are here from now to the end of October. It's the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy you're along with us, whether you're tuning in on one of the 18 FM and AM frequencies broadcasting our program here in 2024. I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow. If you want to be part of the program, participation is welcome. You can do such by sending us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call on the hotline, toll-free, coast-to-coast at 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-7469. You can also find our programs past and present and our weekly garden videos on our parent website, which is thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. We have past shows and in-studio video replays, and thank you for tuning in. However you're doing such, on an app, on the website, podcast replay, in-studio video replay, on the radio, happy to have you along. Big show for you today, but first let's get into, Holly, the joke of the week.
Okay, so my neighbor, you know, saw me kneeling down, busy in my garden, and walks up to me and says, you know, what am I doing? And I was like, well, I'm putting my plants in alphabetical order. And he said, really? I don't know how you find the time. And I said, well, it's right next to the sage.
Hey.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, there you go. This weekly joke is brought to you by
Rescue.com. American-made rescue products keep your family home, yard, and protected from pests, insects, wasps, hornets, yellow jackets, flies, ants, and more. Learn more at Rescue.com. That's RESCUE.com.
So, a couple of weeks ago, it made its rounds on social media.
I just want to welcome everybody back. Yeah. You know, maybe the winter has been restful. I hope it has been restful. It's been restful for us. And maybe you're hopefully in the beginning of garden planning stages, or maybe you already started. Who knows?
If you are tuning in for the very first time, this is a Garden Talk radio show, husband and wife team, and we help you through your gardening season. We bring you context and informational conversation and segments, guests from across the country, and we'll answer your garden questions. So happy to have you along.
So today we're going to talk about, there was this article put out by the University of Michigan.
This made its rounds on social media a couple of weeks ago. Sorry that we're all on social media. It can be good and bad, but this is what is.
It is what it is. So University of Michigan-led study finds that fruits and vegetables grown in urban farms and gardens supposedly have a carbon footprint that is on average 6 times greater than conventionally grown produce. Now, when you see articles,
First of all, we're going to try to keep this as informationally neutral and no politically agended given here. We're just going to tell you, we're going to use common sense on this.
Right. So a lot of times when you see articles like this, you have to think about, you know, in studies and whatever else, like, who are they studying? What are they studying?
Or why,
right? So it turns out that this article was based on gardens that were like communal plots, very like high tech raised beds, landscaped, like highly landscaped, highly weed control fabric, manicured paths, benches, watering infrastructure, etc., rooftop gardens, like the fancy garden.
But if you have, and there's people listening that have those types of gardens.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Once you take the initiative to construct that and invest in that, the maintenance is very simplistic over the years.
Right.
It's getting getting established first, getting the landscaping done, the raised beds, the compost brought in, all of that. And you know, most of this in which this article is speaking about, it doesn't address that the average grocery store stuff comes 1,500 miles away. The pineapples, the avocados, and all of this stuff.
And that's another thing that was pointed out is the nutritional value of your backyard plants and then how they're higher nutrition and you're not going to the store, how it's not traveling. And then there are certain things that are growing in greenhouses, and greenhouses are not as nutritionally, don't produce as nutritionally dense
in most aspect
as they once did.
Yeah.
Now it's become almost like a large agricultural production.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, quick, get it out. And so, they talk about that. They do talk about you could do some research if you want and determine where you are located. And maybe it is better not to grow certain things. Like, for example, if you have, you know, easy access to watermelons, then don't grow watermelons.
Well, I was at the big box store, and watermelons, now it's March. Watermelons are nearly $10.
They had watermelons there?
Yes, $10 at the big supermarket.
That's weird.
Yeah. But yet, but yet, in the summer, people will drive down the road and say, oh, two watermelons for $20. Pull over. Let's get some.
Well, that's because they're like fresh in there.
I know, but still, it's.
Joey and I shop different places.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I shop at a much smaller store with. It's very economical.
It's called research.
It's called research. And it's very efficient. It's based out of Germany. You might know what store I'm talking about.
But the study, you know, when you go to a farmer's market, most, if not all of that produce that is at the farmer's market comes within a very small radius of where it's being sold to you from.
Absolutely. And that's, that's a good point. Just like sometimes when you can't grow something, maybe like, for example, we can't grow broccoli or cauliflower. And you might get it from a farmer's market. If it's something might have a larger, if it's important to you, might have a larger environmental impact, it's better to buy it from the store, then that's an option as well. But they did also note, so like on a happy note, they also noted that there are mental and physical benefits of gardening, which obviously, and that's important. And even like something like a community garden, how that's a social thing for many people. And we have, over the last few years, have lost a lot of social connection, whether it be...
Sometimes that's not bad.
And there's even like, I'm not going to go on a huge tangent here, but there's something called a third place. A lot of people working from home and have kind of reeled in their social ways no longer have a third place. Third places are often like the gym or a bar or a church or a library, and not everybody utilizes those things anymore because of how we've shifted as a society. And so your communal garden could be your third place too. So,
and these titles, and it's pretty much basic across all platforms, but a new report says gardeners are destroying the environment and backyard gardening. It's one of these, we got to click on it, see what kind of junk, why are we bad people now?
Right.
It's called clickbait.
Absolutely.
Now, not discounting the study itself, but the study, commonsensically, doesn't make sense.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, when you do see these articles, and while, you know, the research, it's a university, so they have decent research. But when you see these articles, you have to keep in mind of where the research is coming from. And if it's, I'm not saying this is bias, but what the bias is.
Every story has a bias.
Yes.
Every news media, every TV show, everything has an agenda.
Even
some YouTube channels have an agenda. There's some very neutral that they don't give up about anything. Here's what I'm doing in the woods. But others, there
just
is...
Just like statistics, right?
Yep.
You could talk to one person like me who doesn't like cooked carrots, and then you could say 100% of people don't like cooked carrots, but because it was one person, that's 100% of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you have to keep that in mind as well. I would say if you are concerned about your carbon footprint, then follow, you know, good old reduce, reuse, recycle, repurpose in your garden.
Which is the motto of most farmers and urban farmers,
yeah,
and urban,
sure,
gardeners, that if I don't have to buy it, let me see if I can find it. If I can't find it, let me see if I can make it before I have to buy it.
And then think about things like irrigation, rain barrels, ways to provide water to your garden without offsetting having to utilize or overutilize those resources for water. You know, composting. I think that most people who are gardening utilize a lot of these things.
There's new gardeners that don't know how to, and that's why there is some very reliable and educational videos, articles, and programs, audio programs that help educate them, because we saw the boom in the what now they call it the COVID years. I heard that term used, the COVID years.
I didn't want to talk about that.
Where we saw a tremendous increase in social media gardening numbers across the platforms. And we saw an increase in everything that we did when it came to gardening. That has decreased now because everybody's gotten back to normal life, whatever that means. But some are still holding on to it. And we're seeing an age now where, I guess it's called the boomers, are either getting out of gardening or sadly are passing away, and their children and grandchildren are understanding to some level that things that once were good may not be as good as they once were told that was good, and they are trying to alter what they are consuming and feeding their children, whether by locally or backyard sourced.
Absolutely. Even down to like microgreens.
Yes.
Yes. So I think that is all very notable. And I think the takeaway here is, yes, you can find a good impact on the environment and a poor impact on the environment in many activities.
Right.
And gardening is one of the ones where you can kind of control what you're doing to an extent, and what your impact is there. And I feel like a lot of people are pointing fingers in regards to environmental impact, and it shouldn't go to backyard gardeners. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Well, as we start off season 8, we welcome back WaltonsInc.com for their fourth consecutive season, because you bought what they're offering. Holly, tell people about Walton's if they are not familiar with them.
Yeah, we are brought to you today by our sponsor, Walton's. We know you care about where your food comes from. Canning and preserving your fruits and vegetables is great, but what about the meat? At Walton's Inc., you can get the equipment, seasoning, supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat product your way to your high standards. You want to make snack sticks that people will actually like? Walton's created meatjuststicks.com, an informational site to help you make the best finished product. They even have a full line of meat grinders, mixers, sausage stuffers, and more to help you go from animal to edible. If you use code GROW50, you can save 10% off your order of $50 or more. And Walton's, everything but the meat. That's waltonsinc.com or meatjuststicks.com.
When we come back, hey, the USDA has re-racked the growing zones, the hardiness zones. We'll explain why and what to expect. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Dig planting holes from a comfortable standing position. Step, twist, pull, and plant. Visit ProPlugger.com. Make watering easy. DripWorks provides quality drip irrigation supplies and equipment to gardeners just like you for all your growing needs across the U.S. and Canada. Purchase online at DripWorks.com. Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online. Jung Seed Company is a family-owned and operated seed company since 1907 with the largest selection of seeds and plants online. Use coupon code 10TG24 to save 10% off your order at JungSeed.com. The coupon code is 10TG24 at JungSeed.com for 10% off. Happy 65th anniversary to David J. Frank, Southeastern Wisconsin's leading landscape company. Their award-winning services include everything from lawn care, landscape maintenance, design, construction, renovation, irrigation, sustainability, and more. Big or small, let the experts at David J. Frank handle the hard work for you. Find out more at davidjfrank.com.
Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Moments away, we're going to talk about the new USDA growing zone map. But first, a word from Honey Bee Healthy.
Since 2000, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has helped beekeepers maintain healthy and thriving hives. Attracting pollinators to your garden this year is as simple as hanging a hummingbird feeder with a mixture of sugar and water, Honey Bee Healthy Original. Don't be alarmed to see birds, bees, butterflies dining together at the feeder.
Those are all good things.
Definitely. Pollinators coexist peacefully. Honey Bee Healthy is offering a 10% discount on an 8-ounce bottle of Honey Bee Healthy Original to this show's listeners. Enter discount code BEEGARDEN, that's B-E-E, garden, at checkout. For more information, mixing instructions, and more, visit honey, the letter B, healthy.com, honeybeehealthy.com.
So, you may have seen this. It's like a social media review, I guess.
I think this is important.
Yes, like, the USDA has reestablished or re-racked or re-evaluated the growing zones in which many of us were very familiar to what we were. Now, growing zones, if you're not familiar, Hi, what are growing zones?
Sure. So, it's the U.S., it's technically like the USDA hardiness zone, but what the growing zone does is it advises you your first average, or like your last average frost date. So when in the spring will be the likeliness of a late spring frost, right? And then your last average frost date is your last, no, it'll be your first in the fall. And then it tells you when like your first, approximately when your first frost could occur.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, like if you're looking at a seed packet, it might say plant, you know, before frost or after frost, or sometimes temperatures, or plant after any chance of frost. Or,
and the hardiness map standard is which with gardeners and growers can determine which perennial plants are most likely to grow in their location and survive.
Yes.
So that's kind of the guideline, but also it gives you the other additional information, last average frost date, first average frost date, average or coldness through the winter, because you may see something at your garden center or online that says good to growing zone 4.
So this is a
seven
fun,
or nine.
A fun fact.
Fun fact.
You might
free,
appreciate
free fun fact.
Free fun fact. The USDA Risk Management Agencies looks at the MAPS plant hardiness zone designations to set certain crop insurance standards.
There's a fun word for farmers.
Yep. And then the scientists incorporate the plant hardiness zone as a data layer in research models, such as the modeling spread of exotic weeds and insects.
Uh-huh.
So it's not just for like the backyard gardener, even though it's about 80 million American gardeners and basically like urban agriculturists, urban growers, et cetera, utilize that. It's a dual or multiple use data.
And this is not just a United States thing. There is growing zones all around the world. It's not, you know, not United States Department of Agriculture in Europe or Australia, but they are different ones. There are 13 total around the world.
Right. There is. Correct. And
from from 1 to 13, 1 being like the north, and then 13 being the really, really tropical areas.
Right. So the 2023 map, they're based on a 30-year average. So the last time it was updated was actually in 2012, I believe.
I think it's, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then they're divided into 10-degree Fahrenheit zones. And then there's even 5-degree Fahrenheit half zones. So, and it's based off the lowest annual winter temperatures.
Now, ours changed. We were in like based on where the studio is and the garden and your mom's backyard and all that. We were 5A, 5B. We are now 6A. Now, how you find your growing zone is you can call your local extension office and or you can go to your favorite search engine and type in growing zone and insert your zip code. And then it will tell you immediately, here's your zip code and here's your city and here's your hardiness zone.
Yeah, or you can you can search USDA hardiness zone as well.
Because we're 6A and 5B, that our zip code is a mingle of two, and you're going to get that.
Yes, and that does happen. And the interesting thing is that there is the 13 zones and its territories in the United States. And each zone is broken into half zones, which we talked about. But half the United States got warmer, and half the United States stayed the same.
Okay.
So some people shifted and some people didn't. Uh-huh. And Wisconsin shifted quite a bit.
Where our show originates from.
We're not just randomly talking about Wisconsin.
Yeah, our show originates out of southeast Wisconsin and is distributed to 18 radio stations in parts of 21 states.
Yes. So it's to keep that in mind. And it doesn't reflect like the coldest it's ever been to a specific location. But it's just still, it's based off, again, off the winter, the average lowest winter temperature for the location over a specified time. Then the reason why they do this is because it's a crucial factor in the survival of plants in certain locations. Mm-hmm. And that's why it'll say, like, your frost date, whatever. Because that's what, for most everybody who grows things, is concerned about. Like, you kind of know that these plants are going to be okay in July, but you don't know in April or May.
Your raspberries or your lilacs or whatever, or peach trees, whatever you're buying online. Now, typically at your garden center, they're going to be associated with your growing zone. Now, there are going to be some, like, here's the tropical stuff, but that's very identified as it's not going to grow outside year-round when it gets negative 23 degrees. You're not going to get a pineapple in your backyard if it's, you know, upper Maine.
No, probably not.
But people don't know this, and we're not making light of their...
No.
Because they're not... You know, it's something you learn as a gardener.
Yeah, and actually, it's kind of funny. I was this past summer, actually, I was out to dinner with my friend and his parents, and they were like, how do you know when to grow stuff? And I was like, well, there's a whole hardiness zone that tells you, you know, when basically spring is okay to plant and grow certain things, and then when the fall, it's, you know, you could get a chance of frost. And they're like, oh, that's a thing? And I'm like, yes. And it doesn't occur to me that people don't know this because, you know, I live it. So,
well, we had a friend who worked at a garden center. They were a sponsor for several years, big supporters locally. And he said he got annoyed with himself because he kept repeating the same thing over and over again to people, gardeners, that were asking questions before they asked the question. And somebody said it's okay to, because they don't know what that is, so that you're educating them. Because he was like, I know people are just tired of me saying this, but people didn't know that, so it was new information to them.
There could be somebody right now listening to the show for the first time ever and be a brand new gardener, and we are so happy you're listening.
Yes.
Or there could be somebody who's listening to this show for like the thousandth time. I don't know how many shows we've had, but...
Hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yes.
Like my mom.
Uh-huh.
hey, Mom. So you... You know, you don't know. And that's the thing, is something like this, it's something you live, but you don't know who knows this.
We do this full time. You do this probably part time or weekend. So, you know, obviously we're going to know a little bit more maybe in some areas, and that's why we bring guests on too, so we can learn from them as well. So with this map, you can see it on your, you know, your search engine. You can pull it up and see how things have changed. Now, if you are going to purchase a plant, and the guidelines in which I can advise you, if you're going to buy a perennial, meaning it comes back every year, a peach tree, an apple tree, a lilac bush, a shrub, if you're in growing zone 4, let's just go with that, get something that will be hardy enough for growing zone 3, because you're always going to have that one off deal where it's going to get extremely colder than what the average is. So if you've got a plant that is only good to growing zone 5 and you're in growing zone 4, it's probably not going to make it. If you're in growing zone 4 and you've got a plant that's growing zone 3, it's going to make it even on the harshest of winters. So always go one growing zone colder than what you currently are when purchasing perennial plants. So you don't have to replace them, as one garden radio host said, about every 3 to 5 years they have an anemone, and you know, you got to replace a bunch of plants because it got too cold because you bought for your current growing zone, not one colder.
Say perennial plants 4 times fast.
I'm not going to say that right now.
No.
No.
No. Not your perennial pants.
No.
So, and you can, again, Joey had mentioned, you can find this map. You can find all sorts of information through the USDA, and unfortunately, they no longer provide printed out maps, but you can print out your own.
What's a printed map?
Well, some people might like that.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you can very easily go on and pull it and put it in programs and print it off, or send it to a printer that can make it like an 11 by 17 or something, or even larger. it is would be neat if you could have the if you're able to find like the old maps and like have them in succession on your wall and see how they have changed. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. And I'm sure that you can probably get the old map online too.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? And I'm sure there's books and whatnot that probably have something similar that you can find out there too. So there's a lot of options. And I think one thing to keep in mind.
Well, 1927 is when they started doing the hardiness zones. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The first U.S. maps with 8 hardiness zones was completed at the in 1927. So I'm sure there's some very nice archival information there.
You could probably go to your local library and see it.
Yeah.
So I think that if you're a new gardener, you should definitely look into this. And
the beginning, and when we say last average frost date, let's say it's April 14th. That does not mean April 15th. You can slam everything in the ground and you're good to go. That is simply a guideline. You still have to look at soil temperature, and you can use a meat thermometer to get an accurate soil temperature at root zone, because each plant or plants require different root zone temperature, optimal temperature for either germination or proper growing. And it is determined on long-range forecast, because you can have a week of 75 to 80 degree weather, and then we've all seen it turn, and there's snow on the ground, and it's 33 degrees, and your tomatoes are going to die. Because we've all done this.
We have.
We've all let's put them in the ground, and we cover them, put heaters around them. It's just, start over.
Joey's not being dramatic. He's telling the truth. And, you have to keep that in mind, that just because it's your past your last average frost date, there's plants that need it to be just a little bit warmer, or maybe a little more than a little bit warmer, in order to live their best plant life.
Well, Phylum Bioproducts can offer you the necessities in order to protect your lawn this summer.
Soon it will be warming up, and you want to make sure you can enjoy your yard without sharing it with beetles and grubs. With spring just around the corner, it's time to start thinking about controlling beetles and grubs in your yard garden. Is Grub Gone can be applied to turf or around ornamentals to control grubs and lessen the impact the beetles have on your yard this summer. Easy to apply with a commercial spreader, irrigate into the soil, and it's the only non-chemical BT that works. Find out more at phylumbioproducts.com. That's PHYLLOM bioproducts.com.
When we come back, the garden mythbuster expert who actually does these things and to prove things are good and not good, Robert Polis, will be with us. You're tuned in to the Garden with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Soil Diva Liquid Microbe Stimulant Spray improves the health of your plants you work hard to grow, stimulates the natural enzymes, and increases beneficial soil bacteria. Go to soildiva.net. Soildiva.net.
Deer Defeat is an all-natural based animal repellent to keep deer and rabbits away from your valuable plants that is odorless after 30 minutes and dries clear. It creates a continuous, invisible shield to protect your plants. Works for 30 days through rain, snow, and freeze. Will not clog your sprayer. Apply to your property without environmental damage. You can spray directly onto your plants up to flowering, then apply around your plants to continue protection. No need to reapply. Money back guarantee. To purchase, go to deerdefeat.com and use coupon code RADIO to save 10% off your order. Take the guesswork out of composting with the Aerobin 400 or smaller 200 for easy composting. The Aerobin mimics how nature decomposes waste. The Aerobin is easy to use. You prepare your balanced organic waste, just open it up, drop it in, and close. After a short time, fertile compost is produced, which is easily accessed via the lower side door. The thermal insulation in the Aerobin conserves heat, leading to rapid breakdown of the biomass, and works efficiently year-round, even in cooler regions. There is no need to turn the biomass, and it is patent rodent resistant. It has little odor and can kill annoying weeds and seeds. It is BPA free. The Aerobin 400 or 200 comes with a reservoir at the bottom to collect the leachate, when diluted, makes for great compost tea liquid fertilizer. Aerobin composts kitchen and garden waste quickly. Easy to assemble with no special tools needed. Aerobin makes composting rewarding and easy. Go to Costco.com to purchase. Mantis tillers, the premium long-lasting gas-powered tillers, are the perfect solution for any garden. This Mantis machine is available with 2 or 4 cycle engines with a 19-inch or 16-inch tilling width. Your DIY companion in your garden and your lawn converts easily for edging, aerating, and more with optional attachments. Find details at mantis.com. Wind River Chimes will always be the inspiring harmony. With a large selection and customization options, you will find the sound that soothes you. Visit windriverchimes.com to shop and find out more. Garden like a pro in 3 easy steps and receive customized fertilizer recommendations for your garden or lawn. Soil Savvy helps you determine what nutrients your plants need to thrive. Never again overapply nutrients they don't need. A patented process that makes you a smart gardener. To get your soil test kit, go to mysoilsavvy.com.
Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you've tuned in this week. The first show of season 8. All will be with you weekly all the way through the end of October. Let's go to the hotline, Holly, and bring in our guest this week.
Robert Pavlis is a well-known speaker and educator with over 40 years of gardening experience. He is the author of a number of books and publishes the popular gardening blogs, GardenMist.com. And as the owner and head gardener of Aspen Grove Gardens, a 6-acre botanical garden, he grows 3,000 varieties of plants. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, we appreciate you taking time out of your day, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners.
So, what inspired you to start a Garden Myth blog?
Well, I've been gardening for many years, over 40 years, and as I learn things, I find more and more myths all the time. And gardening is not unique in this, but there's so much information out there that's wrong. It's in books, it's online, it doesn't matter where you look, but the information isn't correct. So I started writing about it.
Well, here's the question that as soon as we knew that you were going to be on the show, I wanted to ask, what is the most common garden myth that people cannot believe is a myth?
Well, the most popular one that people read on my blog is about the citronella plant. So this is a plant that's sold in nurseries and garden centers to keep mosquitoes away. And I started researching this, and the first thing I learned was that the plant they sell isn't even the citronella plant. What they're actually selling is a scented begonia or pelargonium. The citronella plant is actually a tall grass that in colder climates wouldn't overwinter. So we're selling this plant to keep mosquitoes away, but guess what? It's the wrong plant. The other thing that I found was that there's a lot of other plants that keep mosquitoes away, according to gardeners, and they're all fragrant. And it seems like we have this thought in our mind that if something is smelly, it keeps pests away, it keeps insects away. So, for instance, we plant marigolds in our vegetable gardens to keep insects out. And the reason is they're smelly plants. Well, it turns out that North America, at least, there is nothing you can plant in your garden that will keep mosquitoes away. Doesn't matter how it smells.
Well, I find, you know, we have a large social media presence, and when people post things about what I know and what you've proven to be incorrect, I'll grab that link from your site, put it on the underneath their comment, and they don't like it because they are right.
Yeah, I know. Not everybody likes me. The problem is that humans are wired naturally to develop beliefs. And once we believe something, it takes a lot of information to get us to change that belief. All right? And we're all like that. We're just wired that way. So if you tell me I'm wrong about something I've been doing for years, I just simply won't believe you. I tell people, I say, look, this is what the science says. This is, you can go read the science. Doesn't matter. People won't believe it. The one thing I do try to tell people is look, in gardening, a lot of people have opinions because they've experienced something. But in order for you to actually know that it works, you have to do controls. You have to have like two plants, and you treat one way and the second a different way, and then you compare the two, and you have to measure something. This is the standard scientific process. Gardeners don't do that. In 20 years of doing this, I rarely found a gardener who comes along and says, well, you know what? I actually ran controls, and this is how I set them up. Virtually never happens. What we tend to do is we do one thing, we don't measure anything, we get this sixth sense feeling, and we say, okay, my tomatoes this year were larger than last year, and you know I put Tums in the ground this year, so it must have been the Tums. That doesn't work, and it's very hard to convince someone that they're wrong once they have that belief.
That definitely makes a lot of sense. You know, we are all wired very much the same. So, speaking of this, where do you get most of your research from? It sounds like you kind of do some experimentation, but where else do you get it from?
Yeah, well, I could never test all this stuff. So, what I do is I generally get online and I search for sites from government, so universities and so on, get their information. And then I take it one step further, and I use something called Google Scholar, which is a form of Google that looks at research papers. And then I go and actually look at the research that's been done and try and find it. Now, I can't always find it for gardening information, but a lot of times we can, right? So there's a lot of research done in agriculture, for instance, that we can apply to gardening, right? So that's what I do. So if you read my blog, you'll see that I say things, and I always include links to research studies. And it doesn't mean that the research studies are 100% correct all the time. Things change in science, but at least we have a good probability that the information is correct. Right?
Right. Well, what is something that you thought was a garden myth, and then doing all that research and that due diligence, you were proven wrong?
Well, the one that's kind of interesting is that for years, people always said that, you know, at the end of the season, they go out in their gardens and they collect their green tomatoes and they bring them in the house and they either put them in paper bags or in boxes or they just leave them on the table. There's various ways of doing this, and they ripen. And I just never really believed that because I knew you had to let the tomatoes ripen on the vine, right? They need the sun. They need the plant for sending nutrients into that tomato. It needs to ripen on the vine. Well, I started looking into this, and it turns out that's completely wrong. And the science is pretty clear on this. It's been tested numerous times. It turns out that as the tomato, which is actually a fruit, right? It's not a vegetable.
Right,
it's a fruit,
right,
because it's coming from the flower. As that fruit ripens, it goes through a green stage. And if you take it at that point off the plant, it won't ripen. But once it reaches a point that's called the breaker stage, it has a little bit of blush on it. So it's not quite so green anymore. You can see a little pink on it. It's the breaker stage. If you take it off the plant at that point and bring it in the house, it will ripen the same way as it will on the vine. And the reason is that as far as the tomato plant's concerned, once it's reached breaker stage, it's fully ripe. Remember, plants and people have different opinions on these things. So a plant says this fruit is finished when the seeds are developed. And in fact, you can take that breaker stage green tomato and take the seeds out and they'll germinate just fine because as far as the plant's concerned, this whole process is finished. Humans, on the other hand, we don't think those are finished. We need them nice and ripe and juicy and red.
Right.
And so we wait for that to happen, but that's actually happening after the plant is finished with the fruit, right? So, in fact, and I've tested this now for several years with blind studies with friends and so on. If you bring them in the house at that point, they ripen just fine. They're just as tasty. And in fact, they're better in some ways because a lot of the pests that go on these tomatoes, particularly things like birds that chew little holes in them, they wait too until it gets red. So now you're harvesting these better quality tomatoes, bringing them in, and the birds can't get at them because they're in your kitchen.
Well, and yeah, that's the thing, that you can actually enjoy it without having to either sticky fingers or animals. And I think tomatoes, and you know, we've covered this topic on the program, what do you put in the hole at the time of planting a tomato? And there is everything in the world, and you've probably seen this, from Tums to crushed eggshells to everything in between that should not even be allowed in the garden. And it's just amazing that these people continue to do such because, oh, I've always done this. Grandma's always done this. She always had a wonderful garden, that type of mindset.
That's right. Yeah. And I understand it. I understand why people are like that. But I always encourage people is let's stop and look at the science. What does the science actually say? Right. For the Tums case, you actually have to put 80 Tums in every planting hole to give the plant enough calcium.
That's right? A lot.
That's assuming that you have low calcium.
Well, that's assuming you have low calcium, which most soil in North America does not have.
Right.
So in high calcium soil, the Tums do absolutely nothing. Yeah.
So,
in fact, people do that because it's they're trying to stop blossom end rot. And
right.
Blossom end rot actually has nothing to do with calcium, really. It's a watering issue.
Correct.
So
yeah.
As long as you water your plants correctly, you won't have blossom end rot.
I was actually going to just ask you about that because I feel like that's the biggest gardening myth. And people are adding, what's it called, Epsom salt.
Powdered milk,
et cetera. So can you just repeat some of the science behind that? Because I know Joey and I talk about it all the time, but I think it would be helpful for our listeners to hear it from somebody like you.
Sure. So blossom end rot is when the end of the tomato goes black. It's kind of a corky material. It gets hard, and it just doesn't make for good eating. And we used to think that was a calcium deficiency, and it is a calcium deficiency in the fruit, but it's not necessarily a calcium deficiency in the soil. So if your soil is low in calcium, adding calcium to the soil will help. But as I said, most soil in North America is not low in calcium, and so adding things won't help. This is actually a watering issue. If you keep the plant well watered and it doesn't go through these cycles of wet, dry, we want even watering, then the plant takes more of the water and sends it to the fruit, and along with that water goes the calcium. So you solve the calcium problem in the fruit by watering correctly. And this has now been studied for a number of years, and we're very certain about this. This isn't science that we're still thinking about. This is well known. Unfortunately, gardeners don't know that. And there's all these home remedies to solve the problem. It's a watering issue. And that's why a lot of times you'll see this early in the year with sort of the first tomato on the plant, because at that time the plant has a very small root system, and it has trouble getting water. As the summer goes along, you see the problem going away. Well, the reason is the plant now has a larger root system, and it's able to get its own water. And this is another reason why a lot of people believe these myths, because in the spring, they've done something to the soil and solved the problem. Well, the way they solved the problem is that the plant got a bigger root system and took care of it on its own. But whatever you did in spring, you're going to believe worked. And so you're going to do it next year and the year after, and you're going to go online and tell all your friends that this is the way to do it.
Well, Robert, we greatly appreciate the time that you've allowed, given us here. How can people find your website, your blog, and the books that you have written?
All right. So the best place to start is on my blog called gardenmyths.com. And there are almost 700 posts there covering all kinds of things, all to do with gardening. The other way to find me is with the handle Garden Fundamentals. I have both a Facebook group that people are welcome to join, and I'm on there all the time answering your questions. And I have a YouTube channel called Garden Fundamentals. And in fact, this weekend, we just hit 10 million views. And in the next half hour or so, we'll reach 100,000 subscribers.
Very good.
So we can celebrate on your show here. I'm four people short of 100,000 subscribers. So everyone jump on YouTube and subscribe.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, we greatly appreciate not only you being on the show, but the effort and the dedication that you've put forth, not to debunk what people assumed was the right thing to do, whether they acknowledged it was wrong or they didn't know it was wrong. And you've told them, do it this way, save time, save money, and have a great garden. We thank you for that.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's your garden questions and our garden answers. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardeners, farms, landscaping, and more. To find our products nearest you, visit blueribbonorganics.com.
A non-selective herbicide that is also USDA BioPreferred certified? You bet. Say goodbye to Roundup and hello to No More Weeds by Naturally Green Products. No More Weeds kills weeds with no harsh chemicals and no glyphosate. Safer on pets, No More Weeds has a proprietary sticking agent to use around gardens, pools, decks, patios, anywhere there are weeds. Available online at natgreenproducts.com, Amazon, and walmart.com. Order yours today. The same great company that brings you No More Bugs.
Rootmaker starts your plants off right and keeps them going through harvest. From their seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots to their large variety of grow bags, 1 to 60 gallons, their products will provide you the harvest you've never seen before. Visit rootmaker.com. Use coupon code ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com. That coupon code is ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com. Straw bale gardening is all the rage. Get your bale started easily with the Bale Buster Straw Bale Conditioning Formula. This is the only product that has been specifically formulated for use in straw bale gardening. Each unit contains 250 million colony-forming units of trichoderma, fungi, and Bacillus bacteria, in addition to the fertilizer itself, produces fantastic results with a bountiful production of vegetable crops. Start with the best to get the best, traditional or organic formula. Take the guesswork out of conditioning your straw bale. Go to balebuster.com to find out more. If you could double the life of your raised bed boxes by sealing the wood with a clear non-toxic wood preservative, would you? Well, now you can with a clear, penetrating product called Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's 100% non-toxic and easy to apply. Seal your untreated wood surfaces, even chicken coops, by spraying on Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's invisible, seals the wood from the inside out, and never wears off. Recommended by organic gardening experts, Internal Wood Stabilizer. Check it out at TimberProCoatingsUSA.com. Welcome back to the Garden with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy you are joining us for show one of season 8. Time for your garden questions and our garden answers. You got a question? Send it on over to a couple of different avenues in which you can do such. You can give us a call toll-free coast-to-coast at 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-7469. Or you can give us, you can send us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Also, throughout the show, the breaks, those are the companies that support the show. They'll pay the airtime for us to be on multiple stations across the country. Some are offering coupon codes, and you can find that at our parent website, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, underneath the money tab at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, gardentalkradio@gmail.com, and we can get you the coupon code so you can save money and make your garden better. Well, we had a question. We had a couple of people call in, and we will address those questions right now.
I'm Tyler, Westfield, Mass. I have a 20-gallon tomato pot that I filled with parsley in the middle of the tomatoes. And when the tomatoes pass at the end of the year, the parsley is still, right as of today, flourishing and making parsley. I'm actually going to take a picture of it. So So they said, it's a miracle. And I'm saying maybe the middle of that pot hasn't frozen yet. If so, what do you think?
Well, thank you so much for giving us a call. He's listening to us on WRCN 830 AM out of the Boston area. And Holly, it is, the center is not frozen.
Yes, that's correct. That's definitely the solution, the answer. I don't know. But it's,
and this can happen. Yeah.
It can happen, especially, you know, as when we have situations where maybe we have a warmer winter than normal, which happened for much of the United States, where it did not freeze in the center of that thing. And maybe it has at this point. Who knows? But it just is something that can happen.
All right, let's go up to WXAN 570, WNAX 570 out of Yankton, South Dakota, to Ed. He's got a question about his, let's see what Ed has to say.
Yeah, it's Ed Dro, Worthington, Minnesota, and my question is, Alexa says you can use ammonia on garden produce, cabbage, broccoli, and it keeps the moth away that you get on the cabbage. I don't know if the moth does it to the broccoli or not. She says not harmful to the produce, but she did not give me the ratio of ammonia to water.
Well, thank you, Ed, for calling in. We can help you with that. And that ratio is?
It's one part ammonia to nine parts water.
Right.
So you just have to figure that out. So it's about a 10-part solution.
There you go. So let's go to some questions that came in this week. And again, gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Send them on over. First question, should I line my wood raised beds to keep the soil off the wood and keep it from rotting and the pressure treated wood from leaching chemicals into the soil? Pressure treated lumber is not made of arsenic. It is made of a copper material. Copper is an element that is in all aspects of life. It's on the periodic table. Humans need copper to survive. They're very minute amounts. There's been studies that have shown that the leaching aspect of the anything in that wood to the soil is almost non-measurable, no matter what distance away from the wood the soil is. So pressure-treated lumber, it can be used. We used it. We have used it and are using it in all of our raised beds. If you feel that pressure-treated lumber is not something that you want to utilize, you can use pine. You want to treat that with something. You can use Timber Pro Coatings Internal Wood Stabilizer, and it protects the wood from the inside out and tremendously increases the longevity of the boards in which you are utilizing for your raised beds. You don't have to cover the boards with a plastic. Then you're introducing a plastic and a whole nother level of steps in which is not required or needed in order to grow in a raised bed. There are metal raised beds. There are fabricated beds with plastic, you know, the plastic lumber they have. I would recommend wood or metal. I wouldn't go with the processed, this is solid wood too, but, you know, like pine treated or cedar, Western red cedar. I would not do any composites or OSB board or plywood, because that's all compressed glue. And when that gets moist, it's going to expand like a sponge. That can leach the glue chemical into the soil. And then you can have all kinds, and your bed's going to fall apart in the first year anyway. So there's that. I have mushrooms in my seed starting mix. Holly, what do I do?
Well, first of all, don't eat them, and don't let any children or pets eat them either. But it's not a bad thing. It just basically means that your soil is,
you got really good stuff.
Is very healthy, and it's got good stuff in it. So if it concerns you, you can remove them, toss them, put them in your compost, or you can just leave them.
Yeah.
I would just knock them off, whatever. But again, just don't eat them, or don't let anybody else in your household ingest them.
Same thing with mushrooms in your garden. You can potentially, there's two things that could be going on with that. One, you could have a low-lying area where the moisture is concentrating, and that's where the fungi is developing and you're getting mushrooms, or you have really good soil. Both are good. One's maybe a little low, but mushrooms are always a good thing. And if people have mushrooms in their yard and you're concerned with that, remember, mushrooms are not a longevity. They're not like tomato plants where they're going to grow for 90 days. Typically, it's they come up, they grow, they decompose, and they're done like in 72 hours in most time, most aspects. So you can always just take the rake and knock them down if you're concerned of something going to try to consume them, or you don't like the aesthetics of what they look like in the yard. In the garden, they're going to feed the soil. They're going to compost and break down. So it's a very, very good thing to have mushrooms in your potting soil mix or your raised bed mix. And if you're doing straw bale gardening, mushrooms are a key aspect of the conditioning process in most situations. Do I need a heat mat to start seeds?
It depends. So if you are growing like in your home, just a regular part of your home, whether it be like a living room or any room that is about, average room temperature, like 68 to 70, whatever degrees, you do not need a heat mat. If you are, and this is not even for all seeds, it would just be for like probably pepper seeds. If you are growing in a cooler condition, maybe it's like a three-season porch and it's cooler out there, or even perhaps a basement or an outdoor like side greenhouse.
Unclimatized area.
You would probably want a heat mat, but you don't want to think like, hey, I can just use my heating pad for my
your medical
medicine.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get like an actual heat mat.
A horticultural
heat mat for seeds because it will stay on. It can be a certain temperature controlled, etc.
Right. The medical ones are, there's no regulation on, setting a certain temperature. They'll go off because there's safety features. And the horticultural ones are very thin. The mats can sit on them. And you can dial in the precise temperature of what you want the seedlings to be. And again, like you said, if you're in a normal home environment, you really don't need to worry about it. If you just put on top of the refrigerator next to a heat source or a radiator, and you're going to be fine. It's when you're in that unclimatized, that greenhouse, if you don't have a heater or that basement or that shed or whatever, that's where you've got your situation at. But they are expensive. If you can, I would not advise just going out and getting one because, that's what I'm supposed to have because you don't need it in most cases. All right. What do I fill the bottom of my raised beds with? Can I use sticks, twigs, cans, other items, logs? What is a good thing?
Nothing. Soil?
Well,
I guess it depends on how deep it is.
There is raised beds that are, higher height, 24, 36 inches high. However, it's not designed to, and I've seen this over and over and over again on social media. What can I put in the bottom of raised beds? Can I put aluminum cans? Can I put styrofoam pieces? Can I put basically trash in the bottom in order to fill in that dead space? Number one, it's not a landfill. Number two, if you're going to put something in the bottom, something natural would be the key. Logs, which will break down over time, but also absorb moisture, so you can kind of turn your raised bed into a hugelkultur bed. So that pine needles, pine straw, twigs, you can throw shredded paper. You can utilize some of that in the bottom of the bed, but no aluminum cans, no styrofoam, none of that stuff, because that's not going to break down. Now, if you have a large planter on the side of your house, like you're walking in, your walk path, you can take very large terracotta pots, invert them in the bottom of that tower that stands 4 foot tall, and then fill the top half with soil, that type of thing. That would work. But in your raised beds, just bite the bullet and buy the soil and fill it full, and you're going to be much better off than dealing with all the other stuff you're throwing in. Well, Holly, what did we learn today? What did you learn today?
I learned, and I didn't even think about this because I am a scientist of sorts, is that a lot of people, when they think about using something in their garden, they don't do kind of a control group. They just kind of take it for what it's worth. And not that I think that gardeners should be doing that or anything like that, but I think it's an interesting concept and something that we might have to apply ourselves at some point and see what happens.
I learned that with our guest Robert Polovis, the garden myth buster, that it takes 80 tons to utilize any calcium absorbent for the plant when you're planting tomatoes.
I know how much tons cost, and that's
a lot of tomatoes. What we learned today is brought to you by honeybeehealthy.com, Holly.
Whether you're a gardener, bee hobbyist, or professional beekeeper, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has the products to help you maintain a healthy hive and thriving garden. For more information on how to use Honey Bee Healthy in your garden, visit honeybeehealthy.com.
Tune in next week to the program where we'll be going over early season frost tolerable plants as well as seed starting basics. Our guest is Sally Jean Cunningham, author of Great Garden Companions, and we'll answer your garden questions. So until next week, be sure you tell somebody about our show, because power is knowledge. For
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.